93 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, you know, a frequent topic on this show is public schools and what we need to do to educate our kids and do a better job. Let's start with two principles that I don't think can be argued. Number one is we're not doing the job very well. We can argue about the reasons why, but we all have to acknowledge we're not doing the job. When 67% of third graders cannot read a grade level in the state of Arizona, and 65%, or whether it's the other, maybe it's the other way around, of eighth graders are not ready for high school math, we are not preparing these kids for success. We just aren't. So that's principle number one. We are not doing the job. Secondly, there is a political fight going on in some school districts where people that run the districts believe that they have the right to teach our children things that we say that they don't. And these are not educational. These are moral. And that is causing a big rift in public education. There is a story from the New York Times. The New York Times is lamenting and asking the question, where have all the public school students gone? Over 1 million students have evaporated from public school rolls over the last 2 years, according to the New York Times. Where are children going? Now, let me tell you who this affects. This affects working class families. And here's why. Because they don't have choices. Even though in Arizona, your child can go to the school of your choosing, you got to get them there. And if you're a working family where the parents are getting up very early and going to work, you got to rely on the school bus, and it's not easy, which is why I'm an advocate for school choice. I have gotten involved, deeply involved in education here from a talk standpoint and even from an action standpoint. Last night, I was at EVIT, the East Valley Institute of Technology, and their main campus graduation, and I did their other campus's graduation the night before. Last night was about 1,700 high school students completing EVIT training in some skill set. Now, some of them were adult learners, but most of them were high school students that were graduating high school students. In this completion ceremony over the first two nights, or over those two nights, there is a girl that is going to the Air Force Academy. Last year, a girl that was going on to Harvard. Two-thirds of these kids go on to college. They have an over 90% graduation rate. And you're looking at people that are motivated toward a skill set. And I will tell you that the reason why there is immense love for the teachers, and this is one of the best parts of the night, is when the superintendent, whose name is Chad Wilson, when the superintendent asks the faculty and staff to stand, the ovation from the student body was so loud. It was an incredible tribute to the love these students have for their instructors. There is a level of investment, not just personally in people, but in their future. It was incredible. It truly was incredible. These CTEDs, as they're called, these career technical education districts like EVIT, are doing great work in training people for skills right now. When you are training in a specific path for a specific task, you don't have time for the other things. Your gender identity, your sexual identity, all of these other things are important aspects of your life. But do they belong in this setting? And the answer, in my opinion, is a huge no. That happens at home. That happens somewhere else. Why? Not because it's not important, but because it's not the job of the public schools. The public schools are to prepare you for life, whether it's higher education, the workforce, or the military. By the way, all three are represented. They have all three groups stand at the beginning of the ceremony. Students going on to college, students getting a certificate of completion or proficiency in a trade, and students going on to the military. They all stand and are recognized. So starting there with what I see as something that's working, when you look at the basis schools, say, well, they cherry pick. Well, okay. They cherry pick. It's about being concerned about education and curriculum. I want you to hear just a couple of things, and it's important that you hear them. This is a mother. I'm only going to play the first part of the second part of this. This is a mother who began reading at a school board meeting in Clark County, Nevada. That is where Clark County is where Vegas is. In Clark County, Nevada, she got up and began reading an assignment for her daughter that had some words in it that are bleeped out. She's talking about this. The word that she's using is slang for male genitalia. You know which word it is. And they stop her and tell her, we're not going to have profanity in this meeting. And she says, my daughter, my 15-year-old daughter, was told she had to memorize this and recite it in front of the class. 15 years old. but it can't be uttered by the adults in a school board meeting. So this is the second half of that interaction with the board president or with the board leadership.
The teacher required my daughter to memorize this and read this pornographic material.
Excuse me, please don't engage with the audience.
Okay.
Sorry, so please continue your public comment. Your time is, you've got 1 minute and 19 seconds. I ask you simply, this is a public meeting. I ask for decorum, and I'm asking Dr. Jara. Thank you so much, Dr. Jara.
If you don't want me to read it to you, what was that like for my 15-year-old daughter to have to memorize pornographic material and memorize it and portray?
Madam President, members of the board, stats on this. We can have the region superintendent speak.
So when you hear that, does it not, isn't the irony thick with that? We are asking for decorum. We're not going to tolerate profanity. We're not going to have profanity at the meeting. But she says, how do you think my 15-year-old daughter felt? This is what some school districts are up against. And yes, some of them are in Arizona. This is what parents are complaining about. This is why parents want more transparency in education. This is where when you start hearing people screaming about teachers and what this is going to cost and what that's going to cost. And one of the knocks against it, because one of the things that is necessary is that parents want lesson plans and what you're going to teach my child. I want to see it online. I want to be able to look at it and make sure it fits within what I want you teaching my child. There's two questions I've asked multiple times and no one has reached out and given me a reasonable answer or any answer. And it's not a rhetorical question. Number one question is, why do these adults so desperately want to talk to these children about these sexual things? Number one. And number two, what situation would your 15-year-old child be in with another adult of any kind, a family member of yours, a friend down the street, or a parent of one of their friends? Another situation you'd put your child in that you would tolerate these discussions without you being present or without you knowing, why? When would you tolerate them? And the answer is never. Never. We call it predatory behavior. And yet, in a classroom setting, this is deemed a reasonable way to behave. And it isn't. It isn't. Now you go back to the original point that we're not educating our kids. There's even more reason not to have this in the public school system. So when parents are saying we want more transparency, when you talk about and the schools are saying one of the defenses for not having it is, well, it's going to cost a lot more money. Here's another question. What does it cost to train teachers in these different things? The training for teachers, the curriculum you have to buy, how much does that cost? Let's start looking into the cost of these programs and see if it's worthwhile on top of everything else I just said. Coming up in a moment, we get you caught up on the biggest news stories of the day. We call it Did You Hear This? We're going to do it in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, catching you up on the biggest headlines and newsmakers. Did you hear this?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
And we'll start at the border today. Mike, Homeland Security Chief Alejandro Mayorkas saying yesterday they're ready for the expected surge at the border if Title 42 comes to an end next Monday as scheduled. Arizona Democratic Senator Mark Kelly told Arizona's Morning News today, I don't think so.
We need to leave things the way they are right now and to give Border Patrol, CBP, the ability to expedite removal to Mexico for certain individuals. Because if we just allow this to expire, we're going to see chaos at the southern border and law enforcement and border communities are just going to be overwhelmed.
Do you think, Mike, the Biden administration has a different definition of ready than Border Patrol does?
Yeah, obviously they do. And I think that this is where the American people are frustrated because they see this as one of two things. Either you are trying to tell us what we want to hear and insulting our intelligence, or you are doing this intentionally. You know exactly what you're doing. And there's two camps in that. But both of those camps think that it's the wrong direction for us to be going. The American people deserve to have a secure border. You can't have a nation without a secure border. Nobody can. And it isn't humane to anybody at the border, which is what the reasoning was behind changing the rules that were in place before. And even if you didn't like the rules that were happening before, you can't like the results of what's happening now. That's where I think they are having their biggest downfall. Economically speaking, it has to do with gas prices, and in other things, it has to do with the border and the failures there.
Is the GOP the party of racism? Well, MSNBC's Katie Turr apparently thinks so.
And then on the issue of extremism and white nationalism, which is not only on the rise in the far dark corners on the internet, but the rhetoric in a, you know, tamer version, an attenuated version, I say, is now pretty mainstream in the Republican Party.
Yeah, Mike, you're white, you're a registered Republican. Do you need to check your nationalism at the
apparently,
door?
Apparently, I do. Apparently, according to them, I do. And this is where the problems in this country begin and end, is with both sides of the political aisle throwing stones like this. When you start generalizing people, I know a lot of Republicans. I don't know anybody that's racist. We all have differences in policy. We have differences in opinions. I like somebody or dislike somebody based on the way they behave, not by the way they look. And I am not special or unique within the Republican Party, just like I don't think that I have the corner on patriotism in the Republican Party either, that I'm patriotic and somehow somebody on the other side of the aisle isn't. That's an absolute falsehood. But when we start throwing these labels around and marginalizing each other, we aren't dealing with issues. We're dealing with personalities. We're dealing with character assassination. We get nothing done, and it frustrates the average person. You want to know why the voter rolls are growing and growing and growing among independents? It's these kinds of statements and these kinds of arguments. That's why, plain and simple. You are listening to Did You Hear This? We do it every day at this time to get you caught up on the headlines.
Well, there was a report out last week, Mike, that we may have to ration gas if things don't improve soon. You asked Gas Buddies Patrick DeHaan about that this morning.
It's really contingent on how the market responds, right? Now, the economy is robust. Semi-trucks are all across the country delivering goods, and the economy had been continuing to improve. You know, the last couple of weeks, obviously, that's been less true. But there is a concern that diesel, at least, has been extremely tight.
You have concerns that we may be going back to the 70s and rationing gas.
That's always been the concern. And this time, it's not about the falsehood of the availability of oil, which was what it was told in the 1970s. It's our inability to produce it, to refine and deliver it. Those have been dramatically dropped, and that's where the problem lies. Demand is going up. The ability to produce has dropped off dramatically. That's what worries me. That's what scares me. We're not pulling it out of the ground. We're not refining it, and we're not delivering it. We are counting on other places to make that happen. Prices are going through the roof, and we're beholden to other nations. That's a national security issue to me.
All right, cue the X-Files music. The first public hearing on UFOs taking place this week on Capitol Hill. The first public hearings in 50 years. Dr. Seth Shostak is an astronomer who studies extraterrestrial life and says there are a lot of people who truly believe we're not alone.
Polls taken over decades have shown that one-third of the American public believes that aliens are visiting Earth. In other words, 100 million people already believe that the extraterrestrials are here. They report at least 10,000 sightings every year.
Mike, when was the last time you came across an alien?
You know, this is going to be very unpopular to many people. I don't care. I'll be honest with you. I don't care. If it happened, if we were visited by aliens, then I would care. It's like Bigfoot. I don't care. If Bigfoot existed and tomorrow they found proof, it doesn't change my life in any way, shape, or form. So I understand it's a big conversation for people. I understand for the people that love this kind of stuff, it's a big issue. For me, it's not. I don't. If there are extraterrestrials visiting us, so far they haven't made any contact with anybody that I know of. And I don't care about this hearing at all. Is that weird?
No, I think people want to, you know, prove it. If they're out there, let's see it. Prove it.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that's where I stand on the issue. I remember I was here when the Phoenix Lights happened, and I remember thinking then, why is this such a big story? But it was, man. People love that stuff. People love ghosts, people love Bigfoot, and people love UFOs.
Late-night radio shows have made somebody a lot of money.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I know George. I know him. I know George Norrie. We share a birthday.
Wow.
Not a birth year, but a birthday. Coming up in a moment, we are going to talk about rent and some of these fuel price stories, inflation and how it's affecting people, and what are we trying to do about it? Because there are solutions out there. We'll discuss them next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, I want to remind you that now more than ever, hunger is one of the greatest threats to our community, but you can help. Join Gatos and Chad in their fundraising efforts for St. Mary's Food Bank. Every dollar you donate today will help provide food for 7 meals. Text the word food to 411-923 and donate today. That's food to 411-923. Gatos and Chad in the afternoon. Food Bank Fridays is presented by the UPS Store and Sweet James Accident Attorneys. Great program and a great way for you to help. We are on this topic of inflation and how it's affecting families. We're going to have conversations tomorrow with some of the experts, with more and more people seeking public assistance, whether it's the WIC program, you know, the food where people are getting food assistance. Women, infants, children is what WIC stands for. We're going to talk about that more because that's the reality. Now, there's a reality here professionally that I think makes things worse for the average person. What is propping up our economy right now is there are still a lot of jobs out there and people are working. And so there are people keeping their heads above water. But with prices the way they are, having a layoff or having getting fired from a job is going to very quickly dismantle anything you have in savings. Chandler is number one nationally for increase in bedroom rent for rent for a two-bedroom apartment. Chandler was the only city in America with a 68% jump, the only city in Arizona that made the list. They were number one on the list. Miami's at 59%, Portland's at 52%, Austin, Texas is at 50%, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania's at 48%. But there was a 68% increase in the city of Chandler. What are we doing about it? Well, there are projects in Tempe. There's projects in Glendale for affordable housing. The Maricopa County budget that they are getting ready to pass, that's been tentatively passed, allows money for more affordable housing projects and rent assistance. But until we build more housing, until we have more houses available to the people out there that want them, we're in big trouble. And we're talking about purchase as well, because a lot of these families that are renting are not leaving their rentals because it's too expensive to buy. So the people that need to rent that are entering the market or coming into this market from other places don't have a place to go, and it drives up the costs. The other part of this are gas prices. When we look at gasoline and fuel prices in general, and there's nothing we can do about that in the current predicament we're in, this is where I separate out policy from personality. I don't want to see America fail. I'm not somebody that wants to see the president be a failure, therefore my party can get elected, because that means America fails. But the failure is already happening. They keep talking about different ways of getting things done. I want you to hear John Kerry. John Kerry is talking about where our goals are. This is the energy czar, John Kerry, talking about the goals of this administration.
The United States of America, President Biden, has made a commitment that the entire power sector of our nation, one of the largest producers of power in the world, is going to be carbon free by 2035. We're only going to have electric vehicles if we meet our goal by 2035. So this year we have to implement those promises. And what it means is we have to decarbonize the power sector 5 times faster than we are right now. We have to deploy renewables 5 times faster than we are right now. We have to transition to electric vehicles about 20 times faster than we are now. And we have to fully transition to a resilient net zero economy faster.
So John Kerry is saying that we are going to have all electric vehicles by 2035. That is less than 15 years. Less than 15 years. Does anybody think that that is even close to being possible? It's not even close to being possible. But that's the goal. So I've talked about a two-pronged approach. If the president of the United States wanted to be in the good graces of the majority of the American people, if he had John Kerry saying what the goals are, what they want, what we think is the best path forward, I wouldn't agree with them. I'll be honest. I don't agree with them. But if they make the argument and say the future of the world is going to be electric vehicles, is going to be wind and solar power at a much higher rate when it comes to the power we deliver to the homes of people, the experts would tell you that we're going to see brownouts and blackouts as the faster we move in that direction. But I'm just saying, if that was the goal, if they told the American people, our goal is to get move in that direction. But the parent, the president said, under our current situation, coming out of COVID-19, the increase in demand, the supply chain issues we've suffered, the war that's going on between the Russians and the Ukrainians, we have to put those goals on hold. We have to put those goals on hold because there are unforeseen things that have happened that have increased fuel prices dramatically. And the fuel in the interim of what we were doing, we knew fuel prices were going to go up. We had no idea it was going to be over $5 a gallon in the Phoenix area, that every state in the country now would be averaging for the first time ever over $4 a gallon, where it's over $6 a gallon in California, where diesel fuel is at a higher price than we ever imagined it could be. Because of what we've done, sanctions and other things. By the way, let me ask a question, and it's not rhetorical, but it's one you should think about. If the reason why our president stopped a gas pipeline between Russia and Germany was to damage the Russian economy, why doesn't it damage our economy when he shuts down our pipelines? Why is that not a negative on our economy? It was a negative on Russia's economy. We were told that it had to stop to punish them and punish their economy because they were seeking war with Ukraine. So if it damages, shutting down a pipeline damages Russia, why doesn't shutting down a pipeline damage the U.S.? I'm just curious because it's the same policy. Shutting down a pipeline was intentional to damage their economy, but it didn't damage ours. I ask these questions because if this president wanted to back off a little bit, they could. They've got every opportunity. As a matter of fact, many people, including myself, believe they should. And they aren't. Because climate change is what drives everything they do. And we are not going to see a drop in energy prices because they are not going to slow down their goals. As a matter of fact, John Kerry is still telling everybody we've got to do things 5 times faster, 20 times faster to achieve our goals. Coming up in a moment, new news about the Disinformation Governance Board. All of that's coming up in just a moment.
Values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, just a few minutes left before we close it out today. Let's talk about, we've been talking about disinformation for a long time, the Disinformation Governance Board that was created under the Department of Homeland Security. That was the scariest part about this for me, that somehow they see what you say as a national security issue. I've talked about this for a long time. I didn't come up with this theory by myself. It was me talking to people that have come from nations where they can't speak freely, and they are considered to be dangerous. You're a subversive. We used to use that word a lot here in America, subversive. If the government deemed you a subversive, this goes back to the 1960s. If you were labeled a subversive, the federal government investigated you. They spied on you. They surveilled you. And then we had the FISA courts, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, about who we could surveil and when we could surveil them and how we could surveil them and having to get a warrant to do it. And it was to make sure we protected people and their constitutional rights to being surveilled, to being searched. You know, it was something that America needed to happen. And you look at where we're at now, and the theory is, first they marginalize you. They call you crazy. Then they call you dangerous. And then because you're dangerous, they have to lock you up. The best example I can give you is COVID-19. For full disclosure, I am fully vaccinated. I am boosted. I think I had COVID at one time. I don't know that. It was never tested. But I've been vaccinated and I've been boosted, much to the chagrin of people that are close to me on the other side of this argument. But if you look what the mainstream public did with masks and what they did with vaccinations, We have had anti-vaxxers in this country since vaccinations began. I know people who do not vaccinate their children for anything. They sign a piece of paper when they send their children to public school saying, you understand if your child gets sick, we're not liable. That we're telling you the best interest of your child is to vaccinate them. But ultimately, the parent makes a decision. They weren't seen as horrible people. They weren't endangering lives. They weren't none of that. They just were told you have to sign a piece of paper in order to have your child in a public school, and they did. Now the anti-vax population was seen as a subversive group. You're dangerous. You are going to have your child is going to get COVID, and then your child's going to go home and get somebody in your home sick or get someone somewhere else sick, and that person could possibly die. Therefore, your theory about COVID-19 is dangerous when it comes to vaccines. And by the way, your treatment, anybody out there that says ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine is an effective way to treat COVID-19, you're dangerous because people are going to believe what you say. They're going to listen to you. They're going to take your course of action instead of what the doctors say is supposed to be done, and they might die. Therefore, you can't say that either publicly. And that's what's happened. We've had anti-vaxxers, and I don't know about you, but in my family, there are multiple ways to treat an illness. And none of them are scientific. If you had a cold when I was a kid, if you got sick and got the flu, and I'm talking about when I was a young boy, my grandmother would give you hot tea with bourbon in it, and then wrap you in a blanket and said you're going to sweat it out and break the fever. That was my family's plan when you got the flu. Is there any scientific basis behind that? Not really. Ask anybody how you cure. What do you do about allergies? What do you do about this? Everybody's got an opinion. But somehow, because you have an alternative opinion about COVID-19 and about how to treat that, you're dangerous. And I will be very honest with you. If you are going to listen to Joe Rogan and what he believes is a treatment for an illness, he's not a doctor, and he said the same thing. That's on you. Well, they are going to pause the Disinformation Governance Board. On Monday, people with knowledge of the situation said the Department of Homeland Security decided to shut down the board. So it's because they understand that both sides of the political aisle understand that one branch of the or one party within our government, and I say the two predominant parties, and I know there are many others, but the two predominant parties are going to have power at different times, and neither side trusts the other to tell the truth. So when that side gets to dictate what the truth is, it's going to be a stark difference from what you saw when the other party was in power. The cornerstone of who we are is the freedom to express yourself. And the First Amendment protects controversial speech. Not what I say. I don't say a whole lot that's controversial, I don't think. I mean, I make people angry, but it's not controversial. Controversial speech. I'm talking about using the American flag as a doormat, using the American flag coming out of a toilet as art, putting a crucifix in a jar of urine, burning the American flag. That's controversial speech. Your right is protected under the First Amendment to say those things. There are certain people that if they were in office as president, they would tell you you can't if they were able to. And that's why it's protected. So thank God the American public spoke out, and this is going away and going away rapidly because it's something that never should have happened in the first place. Homeland security and freedom of speech, that's a scary, scary combination. You hear the music. Social media users, at Broomhead KTAR on Twitter is how you find me personally. At Broomhead Show updates you on guests in each hour of the show. Follow those both. And Mike Broomhead, all one word, on Instagram is where you find me there. I'll be back tomorrow morning at around 8 o'clock. I hope you can join me for part of your day. Until then, have a great day. God bless.